If we had humans doing that, it would take like a year and 250K of dollars and 8 full-time people to do all of the judging for tens of thousands of submissions. But with the multi-agent network, we were able to actually complete everything in less than a day, total token cost of about $7,000.
Hello, friends. Welcome back to Stay Cognizant, where we bring you the ideas, people, and insights you need to stay cognizant of what's new and what's next in tech. Today, I'm joined by two of my colleagues who are working at the forefront of AI innovation. Babak Hajat is the Chief AI Officer at Cognizant. He co-founded multiple AI ventures, including the technology that became Apple's Siri, and he now leads the charge in embedding practical, trustworthy AI across industries for Cognizant and our clients. Babak, you're also a return guest to Stay Cognizant. Great to see you again. Thanks for joining us today.
Great to be back. Thanks.
And Dan Fink is Associate Vice President of AI Platforms and Software Architect at Cognizant's AI Labs. He's a seasoned AI engineering leader with more than 30 years in software and more than 15 years in tech innovation spanning CGI, audio, consumer devices, and artificial intelligence. And he's now helping to drive cutting-edge solutions at the intersection of software architecture and AI. Dan, welcome. Great to have you here.
Thanks for having me, Pamela.
So today on Stay Cognizant, we're unpacking open source AI, how it's transforming the way businesses build, adopt, and scale AI systems. We'll explore the history of open source, why AI changes the game, and Cognizant's decision to open source our Neuro AI multi-agent accelerator, also known as Neuroson. Why does this matter? Because the future of AI isn't just about technology. It's about creating open ecosystems that drive innovation, reduce risk, and unlock opportunities for everyone. And why now? Because companies that embrace open source today will shape the market standards and expectations of tomorrow. So let's start with the big picture. Open source has driven some of the most impactful tech shifts from Linux to Kubernetes to React. But AI introduces new complexities and possibilities. Why is open source AI emerging as a critical strategy for businesses right now? And what does it unlock? So Babak, I want to start with you. And I was hoping that maybe you could just ground us at a high level on what is open source AI and how it's different from traditional open source software that more people may be familiar with.
Yeah. So these days, open source AI can refer to open sourcing of large language model weights. Large language models, or Gen AI, commonly known as Gen AI, is the state of the art in AI these days. It powers most of what we do in AI. And the first very powerful such models were closed source. They were commercial, such as, for example, GPT-3 when it came out, GPT-4, they're still closed source, Gemini. These are very large undertakings, and I think these commercial companies that work on them prefer to keep them under wraps. So while they give you API access, you don't really actually have access to the weights. So some companies, starting with Meta, for example, started open sourcing, but it wasn't open sourcing in the true spirit of open sourcing, where all the code is also open sourced and the manner by which the training has happened is open sourced. That is relatively rare when it comes to large language models. First and most popular open sourcing took place with simply allowing people access to the weights of these very large neural networks, these large language models. Even that was, I think, a really bold and very helpful move because it allowed for a community of AI folks to be able to build on that. Obviously, there's also other types of more traditional open source around platforms that make use of these types of models. So that kind of thread continues.
So, Dan, why is open source so important for AI development specifically and really staying competitive in today's environment?
just like any other era in tech, there's a lot of activity and a high rate of change going on, especially right now. And it's actually difficult to keep track of everything that's popping up all over the place. Potential adopters really need to be free to experiment and kick the tires to see what the strengths and weaknesses are of all those products out there. And it's highly unlikely that any one AI product is going to be a silver bullet for any one application. But since so much originates in the AI research community with all this stuff, the expectation of open source and sharing ideas and stuff is kind of built in that regard. So if you're going to be all cagey and private and proprietary and put up barriers and costs for people to even try something out, your adoption rates are going to be way, way, way lower. And I mean, I'll say we have some barriers ourselves to still take down, but with what we're doing, but we're far along that path as it stands.
So to kind of round out this big picture conversation, Babak, we'll talk about the open source in a minute, but can you just talk a little bit about what Neuroson is, how it positions Cognizant and really our clients in particular to build more scalable, interoperable AI systems? Like what is it and why now?
Yeah, we open source the core libraries around our Neuro AI multi-agent accelerator, and the libraries are called Neuroson. These libraries allow for the creation of scalable multi-agentic systems. And by that, I mean creating many, many agents that make use of various different large language models as their brains and can communicate and coordinate with one another. They can also coordinate and communicate with third-party agents that are out there. And it makes a lot of sense because as a system integrator, a technology services company, we are often tasked with taking and building and customizing this agentification for our clients. And a platform that is agnostic to the hyperscaler, is agnostic to the cloud that you may use. You may choose to run some of your agents locally and some of them in the cloud. And you know, different departments within your company might bring in various different third-party agents. It makes sense to have a platform that acts as a glue that allows for these agents to coordinate and communicate. And that platform happens to be Neuroson, and we're very proud of the fact that it is open source.
And one thing I'll add there is that it's configuration driven, and it's interestingly enough, it's actually very privacy and security minded, which is not necessarily the default bent of the normal academic AI community. And it's put together in such a way so that process experts can create and experiment with multi-agent systems. I mean, not just coders, but, you know, theoretically doctors, lawyers, people in bioscience, people who are not necessarily coders. It's the instructions are just natural language English to get things going.
So can you, building on that a little bit, can you talk a little bit about what that conversation is like with our clients? Is this something that they are excited about? Are they familiar with the concept of using open source AI in this way? How does that conversation take place? And then what's the collaboration like as they start to use this themselves?
I'll take that one. Clients are typically very welcoming of the fact that they are able to kick the tires on a platform that is open source, widely available, has a community of developers around it. And so that actually is an advantage when we talk to clients. The developers on the client side are able to use, build, extend, integrate, very rapidly kick the tires. And when we get in front of a client, to Dan's point, we're actually able to create agentic systems very rapidly right in front of the client that are relevant to the client. And the good news is we can just immediately say, what we just created for you, you can also create, or we can just pass it on to you, that configuration file, we can just pass it on to you, and you can run it on your side. Because end-to-end, this system, this platform is open source. So that gives us a very good advantage versus more like commercially inclined or hyperscaler specific alternatives. One other thing I'll say is that being open source allows for extensions, allows for some level of comfort and the security that's built in, and allows for the developers on the client side to also contribute to that core. And I think that is also taken to be an advantage here.
Dan, I think Babak started to tease some of this out, but maybe you can kind of expand on the practical benefits for our clients. Experimentation, cost, risk. Maybe you can talk a little bit more about, you know, what some of those things are.
Yeah, sure. I mean, with experimentation, I mean, the sky is the limit. I mean, with Neuroson, it actually is enabling kind of a new paradigm where you have applications that are going between natural language and code and back again and stuff like that. But with the respect to experimentation with the more common user, I mean, agents can use these toolboxes so that, you know, like if you need to access a web service and stuff like that, you don't need to, you can have your coder do that for you, but then you can kind of experiment on top of that. So that's, I mean, with the experimentation, the open source aspect of that, just, you know, it removes all the barriers in terms of the tire kicking and stuff like that. I mean, that's one of the biggest thing. But with respect to with respect to costs, I mean, with now we're entering the world of engineering and trade-offs. So, you know, the good things with respect to the Neuroson and the multi-agent stuff is that you're not really spending your time figuring out how do I connect agent A to agent B in order to make that. You're focusing on the natural language instructions of the problem at hand, and it allows you to keep your focus on that. You're also trading a certain amount of cost for token costs, which are relatively cheap, for more expensive real person, real brain concentration to do a particular natural language task, which is highly productive. So for instance, in the vibe coding judging that Deepak Singh in our group did, he estimates that if we had humans doing that, it would take like a year and $250K of dollars and 8 full-time people to do all of the judging for it was tens of thousands of submissions. But with the multi-agent network, we were able to actually complete everything in less than a day. Total token cost of about $7,000. And there were like, you know, a little over 100 agents in parallel working. Yes, there's some development time, but that was a much more interesting man month than 8 people's tedious man years, you know. So for us, it pushed the envelope a bit and taught us some things. But also with costs, there's some new costs. So like, you know, the basic unit of compute, for this, I mean, it's not just megaflops and IOPS and stuff like that. It's tokens, and that, you know, you're gonna pay for those as opposed to CPU cycles, which people are used to basically being free. And you also talked about risk. So there's it's an engineering thing. So there's trade-offs. So if you're using a multi-agent platform like Neuroson, your risk goes down in terms of a traditional compute software stack, because we're taking all that connectivity, so that we don't, 100 people don't have to screw that up in their own special ways. So that's kind of done. You know, we're doing traditional security scans on that. So that's kind of done. And, we have a unique approach where we have a special channel for private data. So that it's, you know, you don't want your credit card number going to OpenAI. So that kind of comes in a separate channel and is handed around. So you're lessening your risks there. And other than that, we try to take the engineering philosophy of, you know, out of the box, you try to get security by default. And if you want to do something outside of that, you have to do something special in order to do that. But so those are, those are the benefits, but there's also the other side of that, which is the new risks. So, you know, people don't necessarily, when they first approach this type of thing, they don't necessarily realize that they're not working with a non-deterministic system. You know, we have statistical outcomes here. So you have to start thinking about your outcomes in terms of probabilities. 80% of the time, it gets it right. Maybe that's good enough, you know. But then there's also other risks, like, you know, prompt guards to make sure that your agent is doing what it's supposed to do and not trying to perform some other tasks. And then there's other principles of responsible AI, which we could get into, but I won't go into it at this point anyway.
Okay. So, I mean, it's comprehensive in terms of the way that we've thought about it and the benefits that it's giving to our clients. And I wonder, Babak, how does it compare? You know, I think some of our listeners may be familiar with other open source libraries and frameworks like Linux or React. I'm wondering, how does Neurosan compare to those? Is there an analogy or some, you know, way that you might explain how this accelerator compares to or functions that could be helpful for people?
Actually, comparing it to Linux is in some ways a very interesting apt comparison, because Linux is an operating system. And we do believe that multi-agent systems are going to be more or less the modules, the operating modules of not just software and application layers in enterprises, but the enterprise itself. And so in some ways, there is an interesting analogy there. And I think the same reasons why people trusted Linux and it was adopted so widely, I think the same reasons stand to give us the opportunity for Neurosan to also be adopted widely in the same manner. We're still very much scratching the surface of what it means to create a multi-agentic system. But organically, you know, once you create the nucleus, it's like peeling an onion. You keep going, oh, that other module can also be an agent. And, oh, that other function in this process can also be an agent, and I can connect it in. And that connection actually spans not just within your enterprise, but it might span across into other enterprises, like agent-to-agent communications that are not fully aligned to the same organization. It might be different organizations, or it could be going across from consumer to a B2C.
Payer to provider or things like that in the healthcare.
Yeah, exactly right. So, and a lot of what we've built into Neurosan and we continue to build into Neurosan is to allow that sort of scaled implementation. And also, I think maybe an advantage over some of these other open source projects is that this was closed source. It is being informed by, you know, what we're seeing with clients and how we're building this. There's a lot of requirements that are coming in that are forcing us to think about security, like Dan talked about. For example, and or these future states. I think that helps make this solid and reliable. One of the weaknesses, at least in the early days of open source, was people thought of open source as being flaky. Like, you know, it's really cool to get started, but you want to move to something more solid afterwards. And that has changed, I mean, generally in open source, but also I think the manner by which we've open sourced it and the kind of sponsorship and sort of just development muscle that is behind Neurosan also positions it very well in that respect.
The one thing I'll add there is that I like to think of Neurosan as kind of one part Kubernetes, in that you're creating graphs of, you know, connecting, you know, bits of an application together. But to Babak's point, it's also one part World Wide Web, you know, because you have the ability to for your agents to call out to other agents in, you know, in other departments, you know, maybe even on the same server, maybe someone else's company and stuff like that. So there's this, you know, crazy hyperbolic linking potential there. A new Wild West.
Just what we needed.
Well, but for better or for worse, it's here.
So let's take a step back. Let's look at what the data and the trends are telling us about open source AI and business strategy today. And Babak, I'm going to start with you. You were actually talking about Linux a minute ago, and 85% roughly of large enterprises use Linux because it's flexible, it saves money in production environments. You know, it's been around since 1991, but it's still quite ubiquitous. And I'm wondering, I'm kind of guessing based on what you were talking about just a couple minutes ago, but do you see AI following a similar adoption curve?
I certainly hope so. And, you know, to my amazement, I recently found out that Microsoft also uses Linux on their servers, which is that's interesting. But yeah, I think there are properties of open source that allow for that level of adoption. I think that there is interoperability and standards reasons for why a single kind of protocol is going to dominate eventually. We saw that just recently, like Anthropic came up with MCP, Model Context Protocol. It was something that was very needed for people to basically have a standard way of connecting to API or apps and such. And because of that, when it came out, it just got like wildfire. It just caught on and everyone adopted it, including Anthropic's rivals like OpenAI. Everyone kind of standardized on it. I mean, waiting for standards bodies to come up with standards, that will happen, but is always lagging. But protocols that allow for this level of intercommunication and coordination and so forth usually emerge through necessity. And I think Neuroscience has the potential to be able to be widely adopted, not the least because it is agnostic to a lot of the commercial and open source alternatives that are out there, and you know, can subsume them. We've spent a lot of time actually. It is, of course, MCP compliant and A2A, agent to agent. So these protocols that come out, you know, are supported. And natively, we have done integrations with a lot of these third-party or commercial agentic systems that are coming out there. And, you know, one thing that we observe is when people are building these agentic systems, you know, a large enterprise is not going to have, I mean, just it's just the reality. They're not going to have the discipline to only source their agents from one source. And they wouldn't even do that because it's risky. And so you'll get this plethora of different agents and agentic systems that are coming in. And that interconnectivity and coordination is something that Neuroscience is very, very good at. And I think enterprises are going to be looking at doing that using some form of open source. So I think the positioning and the timing for us has been quite apt for taking that mantle. Now, again, you know, Linux is, you know, you said yourself, 1991, it's been around for a while, and it will take a lot of time for us to get there. But either Neuroscience or some alternative, I think, is going to win that sort of mantle for sure.
Dan, I'm going to throw a number at you now. According to a survey that Stack Overflow did, 75% of developers are more likely to endorse technology providers who have open APIs. I'm wondering, from your perspective, how effective is open source, and maybe even what have we seen with Neuroscience in terms of driving sales and revenue?
Well, the Neuroscience numbers are early. it's still early days, but in general, from our experience, you know, open source is an asset to sales. I mean, customers don't want to be siloed with proprietary software after their contract runs out. And you know, while it might be good from our bottom line standpoint to come and say, oh yeah, let's lock them in and stuff like that, customers don't actually want to pay for that. So, you know, if open source kind of provides an end run around, you know, around that part of the, around the value chain, you know, like these are, you know, like if open source project is coming from within Cognizant, people can say, oh, wow, these are the guys that know about this. And, you know, I've heard a lot about this. And so, and, you know, and then there's also the story of, you know, hey, if you want to see how it works, here's the GitHub link, take a look, you know, take a look under the hood. If you need a new bit of functionality somewhere in the, you know, somewhere in the dark recesses of how everything works, create a fork. That's just how it works. Revenue, from my perspective anyway, Babak, I'm sure you'll have your own take on this, but it's a different story. I think it matters a lot that our open source capabilities are making that they make bigger and bigger splashes, because people like Babak, people like Robbie, you know, get up in front of customers or, you know, entire auditoriums full of customers, and they see it and they say, wow, you know, they're doing this with their open source project and that's amazing. I got to get me some of that. And so that's a draw to Cognizant. You know, what we want is for them, like in the agent space, what we want is for them to say, wow, Cognizant's got it going on with this agent stuff. I'm going to go with them, even though I need, you know, this is what I need from agent stuff. You know, they've got capable people, and we're going to go there. So it's a thought leadership thing. It's an overall company brand story thing.
Babak, one last question for you. You know, I think DeepSeek has kind of helped prove the potential of open source AI. What strategic shifts are you seeing when you talk to clients or when you talk to, you know, other folks in the industry? What shifts are you seeing in terms of how companies are thinking about building versus partnering versus contributing? You know, where are things headed along that spectrum?
Yeah, there's a little bit of each. That we see. I do think that we're in a sort of a transition period, and it's happened before. The analogy is like in the era of the PC era and software, enterprise software, people thought, oh, there's going to be a shrink wrap software for whatever, you know, domain X or use case Y, and I'm just going to install it and we're good. And guess what? It's not as easy. Like, you have to customize it. You have to tailor it. You have to find the requirements and so forth. And, you know, there was this initial kind of expectation that shrink wrap is going to work, but then it gradually went into, okay, maybe it gives me 40%, 50%. The rest is, you know, how I customize it and use it in my specific use case. Same thing happened with software as a service. And that shift happened, like the idea that this software is in the cloud and therefore it will do whatever I need. I mean, it was sort of a deja vu of the software era, but this time like in the cloud for whatever reason, which I mean, in hindsight was completely illogical. People thought, well, yeah, you know, out of the box, these SaaS systems are going to work with no customization. But again, that proved wrong. AI has this added blessing or curse that, you know, it increases expectations, you know, n-fold. People just think it's just going to, you know, I'm going to tell it and it's just going to do it. And that's been with AI forever. And so that expectation that we don't require any sort of customization initially and right even up until recently has been the dominant thinking that, you know, we'll bring an agent and it's just going to be, that's going to be how we agentify. One agent is going to run our business, which is just naive. And I think that shift is happening. We do see that. There are companies that have invested in internal AI expertise, and there is some building happening there as well. But increasingly, we're seeing companies relying on folks like us, who I like to say to our clients, we're like half a step ahead of you. Like, yes, we have agentified our intranet and we have a process for adding agents in. And, you know, we've done that for our HR and we're doing that for our marketing. And, you know, and here's how we've done it. And here's the tooling that we've used. And we can bring that and kind of customize it for your usage. I think that definitely helps us, and the technology helps us as well. I think that shift with agentification is definitely happening. But there's another aspect of your question also, which is how is the AI industry looking at open source? There are many tools out there, open source, to be used. And after that initial like commercial burst of innovation and this fear that, oh my God, this is going to be like a black box to us. We don't know how they came up with these magical AI systems, but they really work. You know, with Meta kind of leading the way in open sourcing, and now kind of that mantle of open sourcing of actually large language models and even the code for how you develop them and how you fine tune them has shifted to China, surprisingly. And with DeepSeek and Qwen and these very, very powerful, I think the most powerful large language models today that are open source are out of China. And they are often fully open source end to end. It's not just the weights that you're getting. And disappointingly, companies, for example, like Meta, are kind of retracting from that open sourcing, which I think in the long run is going to hurt them. But you are seeing a little bit of that like shifting back and forth that's happening. I think that these large language models for the purpose of agentification are going to be commoditized to the point where this is not going to matter and an open source is going to be sufficient.
I think even OpenAI is beginning to open source.
They have open sourced some of their models.
But not everything.
They're pretty reasonable. Yeah. Everyone, like a lot of commercial companies are now also do have not as powerful, but some open source track there too. You're right. OpenAI has done that recently as well.
Well, I want to shift gears a little bit and talk a little bit about some of the unique experiences and perspectives that each of you have in, you know, as this future of business and technology and AI is being shaped. And I'm going to start, I'm going to go back to you, Babak, and I'm going to, you know, maybe you can kind of take us back a little, maybe even before Cognizant. What drew you to open source in the first place? And how has that continued to kind of shape your approach as you've moved into this era of AI, which I know you've been in the AI era longer than most of us, but you know, how has that kind of come together for you, and what part has open source played in how you've thought about this shift over time?
Oh, it's a very significant part. I mean, if you've done, I've done several startups. If you're starting a company, that's your go-to. Like there is no alternative. You can't buy a commercial software. Beyond the AI side, like just to set up your company, you're going with open source. And so, and I have suffered through making use of flaky open source and open source that requires a lot of, you know, going in and modifying the code or finding the bugs and so forth. So the weakness and the limitations are also clear. But somehow, the more people use these open source packages, the better they get just by virtue of the way it's the whole system for open source is set up. And the more people start using them and the better they get, it's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy. More people come to them and more is built on top of them. You know, our package, you know, Neuroson is built on LangChain. LangChain itself is an open source library. And you know, Dan will tell you we've suffered in actually building on LangChain because it's such a new library and it keeps changing and they break backward compatibility and so forth. But it did make a lot of sense for us to actually build on top of that community. It's just it is this loop that keeps getting better. You know, simply because you build on it, you fix it, and the more people build on it, the more that core become solid. And that was my experience, and I think part of the reason we open sourced was that, for sure.
One of the other aspects of that I'll say as well is that, you know, the research community kind of demands it, because, you know, it's like, you know, people need to be able to reproduce the results of their papers, and everything that you know, the code in their papers, you know, depends on, needs to be out there. So if something's proprietary, how is someone going to, you know, even be able to reproduce the results of the paper, for instance?
We've talked a lot about the positives and the benefits. And Dan, I'm wondering, what about mindset shift? You know, I have to imagine there are some leaders who don't really yet know how to fully leverage something like Neuroson. What are some of the mindset shifts that you see leaders needing to make to really take advantage of this moment?
I will say, out there right now, I see, even within our own group, a certain amount of magical agent thinking. You know, oh, the agents, they're just going to do this. And as Babak well knows, I think of the word just as being the indicator word for gross oversimplification.
I've been called out on that by Dan several times.
Yes, I call people out on that all the time. Babak's completely annoyed by it by now, but hopefully it's endearing. But the truth is with the agents is that, you know, some of the hype is actually becoming real, you know, so there's some truth to the magical side. But, you know, the other side of the truth is that there's real work and thinking that actual people have to do up and down the stack and up and down processes that involve it, that, you know, that they have to do. So, you know, bots are going to take over the world. I'm not there yet on that one. But, you know, AI is going to help, you know, in its many different forms. It's going to help along the way. Another mindset shift, I alluded to it earlier, is that, you know, with LLMs and agents, you know, I've seen some developers, you know, who are used to, I wrote this program and the computer is going to give this result for it. But with the LLMs and the agents, your results are not deterministic. You're engaging in a probabilistic process. So you need to begin to start to think statistically about your outcomes. And you need to start to think, okay, well, what percent rate of agentic success is acceptable? I like to say that there's this behavior of summiting behavior, where you go ahead and you climb to the top of the mountain, you say, yeah, I did it once. And then you put your system together and like, oh, I finally got it to work. But then you run it the second time and you realize, oh, I didn't get the answer that I wanted. So there's really this extra journey to optimize the, it really is an optimization problem, where you're optimizing the success outcomes of this probabilistic process. And the other thing about it as well is that, you know, people are feeding a lot of things into LLMs, and it's like, we got to get back to regular principles, you know, privacy, privacy, privacy. The research community is not necessarily the first thing that people think of. But, you know, we're trying to lead the way in that. You know, Neurosun offers the ability to, have hosted private LLMs. We have the special channel for private data. And beyond all that, you also decide with Neurosun where all this stuff runs. Some of the systems that are out there, you have to ship your code off to someone else in order for it to run. And, well, do people really want to do that? Not everybody wants to do that. I think there's also in the Gen AI community at large, there's this notion of it's not overt, but it's kind of under the covers. There's like, you know, you have one aspect of the community, which is like, we're going to build one giant LLM and it's going to do everything. And, you know, people will only need to use this one thing. And I kind of call that one model to rule them all, like the Lord of the Rings things. But with the multi-agent approach, there's plenty of really great results that you can get if you just are able to break your problem down into smaller pieces and letting smaller engines do the work, as opposed to a giant costly thing. And another aspect is, people are going to have to embrace, not unlike how software developers have to embrace the principles of secure programming, people will have to embrace the principles of responsible AI in terms of how, and we're going to have to come up with measurements with respect to that. Our colleague Amir, I always get his last name wrong, but our colleague Amir, yeah, he's heading that effort with us, and we're trying to build some of that stuff into Neurosun as well as we speak.
Well, I'm going to kind of last question in this section, Babak. How do you build trust? You know, all of this is, you know, new, it's unfamiliar, it's transformative. When you're out there talking to clients, what I imagine trust is a big part of what you are addressing with them. How do you build it? I assume it's not a one and done conversation, but, you know, how do you approach that?
Yeah, I mean, to start with, if you reference work that you've already done, and some of our clients are actually more than happy to be referenced as agentification partners and clients of ours, I think that is part of it. The other part of it is just the best practices that are allowed in our platforms that have trust as their, you know, designing principle. And, Dan alluded to some of that. When you think of an agent is a combination of a large language model and code. Like any agent is that. Because a large language model in and of itself can't do anything. It just generates. It's Gen AI. It just generates. So when it generates an intention, then the code actuates that intention. That's what an agent is. Now, what that gives us is this optionality, which part of the responsibility of the agent we are comfortable handing off to the large language model, which is inconsistent and, you know, sort of robust and sometimes unpredictable, however, is very smart and can do reasoning and it can understand, you know, open text and natural language and it can produce that. So it has its advantages. And which part it goes to code? And code is completely in our, you know, it's control. So we rewrite the rule sets. We enable that. Also, when it comes to multi-agency, Dan mentioned this, there are two communication channels now. Like you can have the LLM talk to the other LLM, and you want that because it gives you that robustness, you know, in situations that you've never encountered before, the LLMs can kind of come together and spontaneously decide what needs to be done. But there's also a communication channel that is not subject to the whims of the LLM. And, you know, you can actually send data structures from the code part of one agent to the code part of the other agent. And so a lot of what needs to be secure is handed off that way. So by clients seeing that elements and tools and best practices are built in and are we're able to actually implement them on this framework and platform. And trust has not been like this afterthought in the design. I think that is very, very important. At the end of the day, though, you might create an agentic system and realize that some of the agents aren't quite doing what you expect. And that comes down to being able to split them into more agents and kind of like maybe narrowing down the domain in which they operate. Maybe rather than giving them five API to call, give them one or two. Rather than giving them a huge data store to traverse, you know, give them smaller chunks of it. So there are ways for us to iterate. And a very important, I think, property of present-day AI and especially agentic systems is they just beg to be used in an agile manner. Build that first agentic system, trial it, validate it, and find out where the weaknesses and limitations are and add to it and, you know, sort of iterate on it. That's the whole point. That's why when we get in front of a client, even in that first meeting, we create in front of them that first agentic system that could be that nucleus, that starting point to iterate on. And I think that whole mindset, I think, is conducive to trust.
I've got something about the trust aspect of LLMs and agents that I also talk about a lot. So like, if you're using ChatGPT, I hope everyone who's listening to this has already used ChatGPT. But if you're using ChatGPT, you're interacting with a single LLM and it's, you know, its basic function is, given everything that was said before, what is the best thing for me to say now, right? And and when you're interacting with that one LLM, you have that, it's kind of thrust in your face, whether you know it or not. You have that decision of, am I gonna trust what it's telling me, you know, right now at this moment. For the most part, you can say yeah, but you know, sometimes it's like, yeah, I bet it doesn't know too much about this esoteric subject that I might know something about or whatever, right? So you have to the choice to trust is kind of thrust in your face at that point. But interestingly enough, with the multi-agent systems, the agents are kind of, you know, they're using multiple LLMs and multiple conversations with LLMs in order to get the job done. And they're kind of implicitly trusting who's sending them information, and that can actually lead to a certain brittleness of trusts, and that's where it becomes you know, a prompt engineering optimization problem, where it's like, okay, I'm now more sure than I was before that this particular agent is sending up better information than he was in the past. And eventually that line of trust filters up to the user. Do I believe that when I ask this agent to file me, file for my vacation on my behalf, do I believe that it actually did it? That type of thing, you know?
So last question for both of you. How are you going to define success for Neuroson?
To me, it's a simple criteria, which is basically adoption and the growth of the community. If we can get many people forking, starring, using the repo, it's an open repo. We can see who is using it and how often it's being used.
Internal or external?
Internal or external. I think that's the definition of success for me. That's ultimately what I'm looking at. And it's an indication that people are trusting the platform for their business.
Dan, anything to add to that?
No, I wholeheartedly agree. And, you know, I believe we're kind of in a certain phase right now where, you know, our curve is starting to go up a little bit because we've been talking about it for so much. Other people are starting to talk about it that, you know, are not Babak and myself, which is a good feeling. You know, even, you know, Ravi's even talking about it, which is good. But, you know, when other people within the company are starting to evangelize it, great, fantastic, you know, make sure we see it so that we can, you know, repost it and stuff like that. People outside the company, when they're kicking the tires and they talk about it, great. So, you know, it's that extra little bit of marketing boost that goes beyond word of mouth, which is, you know, the new word of mouth, which is the social media stuff. So,
well, as we heard today, open source isn't just about code. It's about building ecosystems, accelerating innovation, and creating shared value. And Cognizant's decision to open source Neuroson reflects our commitment to shaping AI's future in a way that is collaborative, practical, and scalable. Babak and Dan, thanks again for being here today. It's been so great having you on.
Thanks for having me.
Very happy to be here. Thanks a lot, Pamela.
And thanks to all of you for listening. We'll be back soon with more on how Cognizant is helping organizations turn emerging technologies into meaningful progress. We'll see you next time on Stay Cognizant.